Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I feel like a fluffer on a porn set. DGS is the think tank. I'm fine. I'll do a Taliban. I'm standing up. And my microphone stand just keeps falling. So it's like, okay, this is what it's going to be like in 10 years.
Performance issues.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Come on. Gabe Pfeiffer's here. Good to see you. How are you?
Hey, doing great. Good to be here. Thank you.
I dicked you over, didn't I? Last time we were on, I said, walking out, hey, you know, I'm an agnostic, but I'm open-minded. Let's get together and have breakfast. You're like, I would love that. And then I'm like, I don't want to do this. Like, I'd love to have breakfast with you, but I misrepresented my interest. In learning more. So.
I was really excited about that. I was like, oh, we can talk, but no, that's cool.
I had a guy, very nice man. So if he's listening, I'm not crushing you. I had a man at one of my events, the Rack House.
Yes.
We had 250 people, and I'd had 249 conversations, and I'm walking out the door, and I'm an hour and a half late, and this very nice older gentleman said, hey, I need 10 minutes of your time to convince you you're wrong about God. There's no way this is going to go well.
No.
And he did it by trying to convince me that evolution wasn't real. And he did that through a series of multiple choice questions that he gave me.
Gosh.
Like, how many trillion cells? And I'm like, 400 trillion? He's like, no, see? Like, what are we doing here? You want to just come home with me?
Oh,
my gosh. Make this weird?
Speaker
Tim Jones is here. Hello, Tim.
Oh, hello, Dave. Good to see you.
Not having breakfast with you either, so don't even think about it.
That would be interesting.
It would be. Megan McBride, for her first time. Megan, I saw you on the Hancock and Kelly show a few times.
Very good.
And I said, give me Hancock. They said, he's not available. I'm like, give me Megan then. No, you're really good.
Well, thank you.
Really, here's the deal. We're lousy with conservatives. Like, they're running around like crazy.
Yeah,
like
there's
rabbits.
A lot of them. Yeah. A lot of them around here.
Yes. Yeah. But I got a million Gabe Pfeiffers.
Yep.
It's difficult to find more liberal, progressive people. So that would define you.
Well, I would say I consider myself more of a moderate Democrat than a super progressive. But I mean, a moderate Democrat to you is probably still very progressive. So
well, probably
I will
not
be
to me,
happy to be
because
here.
I'm a very moderate.
Yeah, you're in there.
Republican libertarian. So we're probably pretty close.
Okay, I'm interested to see.
Which we're going to talk about that a lot today because after I was so mad at Ocasio-Cortez. Did you see the little deal she did about moderates?
Oh no, I didn't see that one.
I don't want to do an impression of her, but it was basically at the South by Southwest,
mm-hmm.
saying that being a moderate is not taking a stance. It's an approach to life. And it's just, she does one of these. And everyone, of course, loses their mind and claps. Excuse me. And said it's just a whole meh kind of way of approaching life. Mm. You're not really into anything. You don't really believe in anything. And I could not disagree more. I just could not disagree more. To me, it's about being able to chew gum and walk at the same time. About the ability to say, I'm very hawkish on defense, and I'm very big into personal responsibility, and get your ass off the couch and go to work. However, if you're a man and you think you're a woman or you want to marry someone, I don't care. Do whatever you want to do. You know, I'm not going to try and foist my beliefs onto you. That, to me, is being a moderate. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I would take it a step further that I think common sense has become undervalued in American society. And I think a lot of what being a moderate is, you know, exercising common sense that, you know, it doesn't work if everyone's just like you, if everyone has the same point of views. And to me, being a moderate is being able to look at somebody that you disagree with and say, you know, I don't agree with you, but I respect that you can feel that way. And I actually want to hear, because if we actually talk to each other instead of going to the extremes, maybe we'll find some solutions to problems that we all agree on, even if the path isn't the same. So common sense to me is vital and I think really key to being a moderate.
Do you feel any pressure yet from your quote unquote side of the fence that you're too moderate, that you're being left behind because of the AOCs of the Democrat side?
No, and frankly, I don't really care if they feel that way because I think most Americans do fall in the kind of moderate place, whether you're an independent or you're not to the far left and the right. Look, the extremes exist for a reason, right? You do have to have the extremes to kind of push to the next level, bring new ideas, create buzz, maybe take a more, you know, far-fetched conversation, and then you pull it back to the center and say, what's realistic about this? Does this have merit? Does this have value? And how do we move forward? So I think this argument that moderates don't care is, it's naive and it's silly.
Yeah. One of the interesting things about this whole thing is that it's kind of built on us using these words that lose nuance, you know, immediately. So what is a moderate, right? What does that mean? And Dave, your example was you gave, you know, military or foreign policy versus fiscal policy versus social policy. And because of those stances that you have, you consider yourself a moderate. Well, that's suggesting that on the extreme, you have to have all of those, and on the other extreme, you have to have, you know, all of the a different set. And I think that's kind of built into the way we have positioned ourselves politically, right? So we have, you know, the Democrats believe this set of things, the Republicans believe this set of things, and if you're a moderate, it's because you're taking a little from both. But that, I think, it loses some greater aspect to it, I guess. Maybe the idea of coming at politics with a specific philosophy and then using that philosophy to judge each system, each policy, each idea on its own. And I think we all do that. It's just that some of us end up in the political spectrum anyway, on one extreme or the other, or somewhere in the middle like mm-hmm. you.
Dave, despite what people think, I actually have friends of all political persuasions. In fact, you see me often in here sitting next to my good friend Mike Colonna, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and it's because I can respect you if you truly do believe the political philosophy by which you espouse, whether you're a liberal or whether you're a moderate, whether you're a conservative or a libertarian or whatever you may be. It's the people that I think are fraudulent, you know, who say they're one thing, but they really mean to be doing another. And I'll tell you, that's why Donald Trump on the right and Bernie Sanders on the left have been so popular, because they're populists, right? So Trump is a conservative populist, you know, center right populist, Bernie's center left. And Colonna and I often talk, and he often bemoans the fact that there's people here in the city of St. Louis that he considers, you know, complete leftists and lunatics. And I know another Democrat who calls, you know, some folks, you know, down here, the Cherokee Street Taliban, you know, and these are Democrats talking about other, I guess, Democrats. But, you know, just be honest about your political philosophy, back it up with facts. And I think I understand, as someone who's a very much a conservative, you need the great middle, because that's where a lot of people in this country fall. And so it's kind of like what Megan was saying, the tug of war is to convince the people in the great middle, okay, this is a good idea on the right, so I'm going to go with this one. And on the left, this is a good idea on the left, so I'm going to go with this one. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you have to be honest about your beliefs and back it up with some kind of facts based in reality.
So if you were king of the Republican Party and you could make these kind of calls, what two or three talking points, issues, topics would you say, guys, let's go easy on these? We're kind of losing the middle by talking about these things all the time.
I think I'll give you a perfect example where two things that have evolved during my lifetime and started happening during my legislative career. Republicans, so we had the Tea Party on the right? And the Tea Party at first freaked us all out. We were like, who are these people? Where'd they come from? They don't know anything. They just got here. And they said, no, you know, we need to get back to our constitutional conservatism, you know, honoring the original intent. You Republicans are a bunch of big spenders. You're acting just like Democrats. Let's get back to our core. However, they also brought some issues to us on the social side. And they said, how about taking a look at marijuana and the use of it, because it's a weed and we grow it and maybe it's got some medicinal purposes. So the Republican Party has come a long way over the last few years on medical marijuana. We've also come a long way on criminal justice reform. And President Trump helped pass a major bipartisan criminal justice reform bill that he got a shout out from Van Jones about that on CNN 2 weeks ago. And so those are two big areas, Dave, where I think we've already come a long way and we should continue to reach out. And another one I'm a huge champion of that I'm so upset at some of my establishment Republicans on, especially in the rural area, is education reform and choice. And nobody may have seen this yesterday. It's a little inside baseball, but yesterday in the Missouri Senate, Republicans helped kill a major education reform bill because their outstate rural superintendents told them it was bad.
I think those are good. I think those are really good examples. Like, I've been doing this for 19 years. 10 years ago, if I would have said, hey, I'm a staunch conservative and I'm for legalized marijuana and I'm for criminal justice reform and some of these people on drug charges, I would have been ran out on a rail.
You couldn't even run for office.
No.
Back then.
Not even close. Megan, same question to you. If you were king of the Democrats, what do you think, like, the Democrat Party has kind of exhausted people on?
Well, I think we have to recognize that capitalism works. We are a capitalist country. And so this idea of saying, well, I'm a socialist Democrat, I think that has to be very clearly defined. I don't think there's any argument that we have major socialism-based policies and programs in this country. And if you say that we don't, you're just not paying attention. So that's my big issue is, capitalism works. Does it always work? Does it work if we take away the rules? Does it take away regulation? Does it benefit everyone the same way as if we kind of have a cop looking at how things are going? Are the markets working the way they should, or are they being taken advantage of by some? So that's my number one right now. My second thing, really, and I care deeply about the environment. I think we should definitely be looking at ways to protect the climate, to try to do what we can to get away from the energy that we use now. But this idea that we're going to transform the entire country and everyone's way of life overnight with one new deal, one piece of legislation, is not honest. You are not being honest with your base. You're not being honest with the American people if you tell them that that's going to be accomplished.
Yeah, I liked when the founder of Greenpeace came out and said it would take a legitimate 500 years to come off of fossil fuels completely.
Exactly. But again, that doesn't mean that you don't take some steps to go in that direction,
yes,
right? But I think we have to be very honest with people whenever we talk about these more out there ideas and programs and be realistic with folks. And sometimes I think parts of our party have gotten away from that.
Going back to my days as a lawyer, I'm going to ask you a terrible question because it's pure conjecture. But what do you think most Democrats think they mean when they say they're pro-socialism?
I think what they mean is that there's going to be a safety net, right? I think that they look at Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and they say, hey, it's not right to me that we have veterans who aren't able to come home and get the services and have a place to live. The government is responsible for that. And that is, to them, I think, a socialist idea, right? But I don't think that most people think everyone should get paid, even if you don't want to work, right? But if you are truly disabled or you have a child, you know, who is not able to function in a normal daily life, there is a little bit of a responsibility on behalf of the government to support you.
I agree with that. I don't think most people really want the state control of industry.
No. And see, I think where following up on that, I agree with one thing, disagree with one thing. So I think if Howard Schultz would run as a Democrat and not
agreed
as an independent, I think he would give Trump a true run
He'd
for his money.
He'd scare the hell out of me,
He's a liberal that believes in capitalism and in the free market. And so why he's choosing to do this, I have a sinister conspiracy theory there. But on the other hand, you know, I think our socialism type things we have are what Republicans would also refer to as the social safety net. Whereas I think the majority of the country, even though it's kind of hip and cool to say I'm a socialist now, the majority of the country, Democrats, independents, and Republicans believe in the free market and an opportunity.
Quick break, right back, DGS. Welcome back, guys. DGS Think Tank. We have Speaker Tim Jones. We have Gabe Pfeiffer. We have Megan McBride making her first appearance. You hear her on KMOX and see her on television. Good discussion so far. I like this because I think this is, I've spent most of my life pretending to be something I'm not, and especially when I was young, and I would have completely been a socialist and had no idea what I was talking about.
Yeah.
It just seemed way cooler than being like whatever the other thing was.
And really, I think that goes to a lot of what's going on right now. I think we've lost the complete definition of what socialism and capitalism are, to the point where, did you catch that clip of AOC actually trying to define those two things?
No.
Yeah, it's pretty indicative of I think what's out there right now.
They're just labels, right?
They're labels for feelings as opposed to ideas about actual economic things.
That's true.
Socialism is the public ownership of the means of production, right? That's what that means. It's in a book. You know, a guy a long time ago wrote it. There's no take backsies, right? Capitalism is the individual ownership of the means of production.
Have you done a video on that yet?
Not yet, but it's coming.
Gabe does these little
YouTube. I'm working on it right now.
No, I know.
And they're really cool.
Yeah. Beto, is it Beto or Beto? Let's just get this.
Robert Francis O'Rourke is what it is.
It's Bobby. That's what it is.
It's Beto? Shut up. I depend on you. I expect better from you.
Beto.
We'll call him Tito, like in the Jacksons. So Beto just came out and said, I'm a capitalist, which is probably a giant mistake for Beto, right? Mm-hmm. I mean,
I didn't know he was giving his brand. I thought 2 weeks ago he said he was running for the Senate again, and he wasn't running for president.
Nah, he's in.
All of a sudden today, I'm running for president.
Oh, this was kind of interesting.
He's looking to change the world.
He gave this big speech or an interview, and one of the things he said was, I was born to be in this.
Mm.
And then the left, several very liberal journalists were like, oh, really? Because you're white? Because it's white?
Oh.
And I thought,
and
like,
there you go.
And I'm always saying this, like, just be careful where you plant your flag because eventually someone's going to come for you.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen this now over and over again, you know, that you're not conservative enough, you're not liberal enough. And now Beto O'Rourke, in his first interview post saying, I'm going to be a candidate, everyone's like, oh, white privilege. You're born to be in this. Like, shut up. We're not going to. I'm not even kidding. We're not going to be able to speak to each other pretty soon. You're going to be terrified.
That's the way it's going. I will say, I'd rather him say he feels he was born to do it than saying God chose him to do it, which is what's happening with our current president. So that would be an improvement all the way down. I'm actually pretty pleased with, you know, him choosing for himself.
Trump may consider God a co-worker.
Newt Gingrich made a great point this morning, though. I caught a clip of him. He said, you know, not even the two biggest egos on the planet, Barack Obama and Donald Trump, said they were born for it, though. So Beto is apparently eclipsing them. I don't know. I don't know what to make of this guy. I'm so confused about him, to be honest.
I'm confused by
Megan. Do you like his deal? I mean,
I like the way he carries himself. I like the way he speaks. I do think that he has a little bit more of the moderate in him and an ability to communicate with people on real issues. I think the fact that we're at a point where you have to say clearly that you're a capitalist is hilarious.
It's a little odd.
I enjoy it. It's going to make for some very interesting conversations.
And how do you handicap Joe Biden's chances?
You don't. Joe Biden is Joe Biden. I mean, I know when you have Republicans on television saying the only person that Republicans are scared of is Joe Biden, you got me with Joe Biden all the way. I mean, it's going to be hard for anyone to overcome that because people know who Joe Biden is. To Tim's point,
he
clearly stands where he stands. He has a history of speaking to a certain group of folks in this country, and that are the folks that we have to talk to clearly if we want to beat Donald Trump again. So I am Team Uncle Joe all the way.
In the past, though, Joe has overcome himself. Right?
Yeah.
Twice.
But that doesn't exist anymore, right?
Right.
The Donald Trump era has made what used to look like a Joe Biden gaffe be absolutely nothing.
I just think with 40 years of different views, some of which are very almost leaning towards the right side of the aisle, and he says nice things about conservatives a lot, I think the new leftists who are going to be on that stage with him are going to try to tear him apart.
Yeah, I think that'll be a bigger weapon than like rubbing women's shoulders or saying dumb things. Because, once you have grab them by the pee and then you're elected president.
It's all over, yeah.
Really? You're rubbing someone's shoulders? But I do think that'll be the weapon.
But you have to remember, though, I mean, the part of the party who's going to attack him for being too moderate is a small part anyhow, right? And those aren't the people that we have to get on board to beat Donald Trump. So the people who really want to hear an honest message from a guy like Joe Biden, who they believe represents working people in the middle of this country, they aren't going to care what AOC has to say about it.
But they will care what Bernie has to say, like the guy who's not even truly a Democrat. You know, he's an independent socialist. And he would have won the nomination last time, but for the superdelegate rule.
Shenanigans, yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see if he's still that popular or not. The one who actually I'm most impressed with, I don't agree with her on her policies, but Kamala Harris is impressive to me. I mean, she's she brings a lot of she would be a lot of firsts again, right? Like Obama was, but unlike Obama, she actually, in my opinion, has more of a resume. She was an attorney general of the largest state in the union, and she used to defend the death penalty. And now she'll get picked on for that, but she actually has done things in her life. And I heard her speech; she can give a heck of a speech. She actually worries. She and Biden probably worry me the most, but I just don't know that Biden can get out of a primary.
And I'm thinking that's probably the ticket. Like, if I wanted to beat Trump, that would be my ticket. Probably Biden at the top.
Biden, Kamala.
Kamala Harris, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. But going back just real quick, I wouldn't totally discount the AOC wing of the Democrat Party, just because what they've, the apparent power that they've shown in the House seems to be a little outsized based on the numbers that of the, who they are. You know, for some reason, Pelosi and a number of other Democrat higher ups seem to give a lot of deference to them that I wouldn't think, you know, based on the numbers, like kind of like you're saying, that they should. Because it's like, hey, you guys represent a small wing of the party, but for some reason they seem to be, you know, I mean, first of all, being on the committees that they're on is a big deal, and then the deference to Omar, and you know, with her comments and just trying to, you know, protect her from those, you know, those type of things make it seem like they are more powerful than they probably should be.
Yeah, I think, though, that's the nature of the body that they're in, right? I mean, they're members of Congress. It's a large, diverse caucus. I think you're going to want to bring the newcomers into the fold and try to work together. I mean, you're not going to off the bat be Nancy Pelosi and say, sit down, we don't care, be quiet. That would not be an effective way to lead. I think, though, when it comes to presidential primaries, where you have to win and the votes you have to get, those AOC types who elected her, they are in pockets that are already going to be fine for Democrats,
yeah,
right?
Good point.
I'm
no
thinking
risk. Yep.
Michigan, Wisconsin, places that we have to speak to people again. And while they may like some of AOC's ideas or think she's cool, lady from New York, they are going to care about the policies that a Joe Biden is going to be discussing, or at least the messaging that he's going to bring to the table.
I have to confess, some hypocrisy, which I do pretty much every day, but I've said many times I would be okay taking all 500 whatever members of Congress, giving them their walking papers, doing a national lottery, and replacing them randomly with citizens. However, when I heard the whole thing about that, you know, they had this cattle call and AOC's brother put her name in and they liked her and now she's in the Congress, it bothered me, even though I'm saying do it randomly. But I'm like, well, that's no way to get to Congress.
Well, that's not so much hypocrisy as in taking new information. You know,
you've changed my mind.
You've evolved your opinion.
Yeah. See, that's we like that is when
evolving
we get,
hurts.
We,
I don't like
we
it.
Get we get empirical evidence of something not working, and we say, hey, that maybe that doesn't work. But in a lot of ways, our politicians don't do that. They see things that don't work, and they just keep banging their head against them until this one time they will work.
Well, and Dave, that's the problem with people making careers out of, you know, something that's supposed to be a public service job for a period of time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can have the term limit discussion. I don't know where exactly I am on that anymore. But this is why Donald Trump won, I believe, because he made the argument to the American people, many of whom had never voted before in their entire lives, that the system was, same thing Bernie was saying on the left, the system is rigged against you, it's broken. Washington, D.C., Republicans and Democrats play a game, they all are in on it, they all feed each other, they all get rich off of it, of the system just constantly taking from the taxpayers, never giving back. So that's why Trump won. It was a populist message.
It's a swamp ideal.
I don't like Bernie as much as I used to, but the last go around, what I really respected about him, when I was impressed, is he seemed to be the only person who didn't have to think about his answer. You know, you'd ask on the Sunday shows, you'd ask someone and you could tell they're mentally waffling, and he'd just give it to you. He just with his little hunched over Count Chocula thing, you know. Like a gargoyle's grandpa just walked in the room. But I respect that when someone just knows what they think. They just lay it out there.
I think voters respond to that. Yeah. I mean, it was pretty clear in his candidacy that they did. I think, though, that, again, that's going to be something that might get Bernie in trouble again this time. I mean, he's already offended the far left this week very quickly. And I think a lot of his positions when it comes to, you know, the NRA, guns, things that he doesn't have to think about, that's just what he believes, I think will continue to get highlighted this go around.
Yeah. When we come back, I want to talk about free speech and people saying dumb things on both sides. More of the Think Tank right after this. Welcome back, guys. DGS Think Tank. We have Megan McBride with us, Gabe Pfeiffer, and Speaker Tim Jones. So, free speech and saying dumb things. This past week, we had Tucker Carlson, who was quote-unquote outed by Media Matters on some comments he made on the Bubba the Love Sponge show. My God. And mostly misogynistic. You know, is like, you know, women are primitive. What's so difficult about that? Said that one woman was being the C word, E, which I didn't know was really even a word, to put it in that tense. And several other things. And then the same week, Judge Jeanine was talking about Omar and drew a weird circuitous line between she's wearing a hijab. I wonder if she believes in Sharia law, and that's unconstitutional. So I've heard many people, some here on the station, saying, well, what she said was perfectly fine. But, you know, to say anyone who lives their life by Sharia law has to admit that that is incongruent with the Constitution. Okay, you got me. That's just sort of, you know, factual. We should all agree with that. But then saying that someone who's wearing a hijab must believe, you know, right, that's where it got weird. Yeah. And I almost called him Beto. Tucker is in very quintessential Tucker Carlson fashion, planting his flag. I'm not going to apologize. I'm not going to do anything. It's the mob left. They're coming from me. And so far, the right's rallying around him. Tim, how's this hit you?
Yes, as you know, Dave, one of my favorite subjects, we talk about this often, the right to free speech, the First Amendment. And listen, I have had my battles with the media over the years. You know, I'm going back to, when I was in my city council days, definitely in the state legislature. And believe it or not, I'm a weird paradox on this, because even though I have this love-hate, well, more hate relationship with the liberal media, I actually carried several bills for the Missouri Press Association, because I understood there is a difference between the editorial boards of some papers and then your hometown local newspaper that's just trying to get the news out there and is a forum for everybody. And so, you know, I'm kind of like Thomas Jefferson on this. He was very conflicted on the media as well. He stood up for the media and the First Amendment, and he also called them, you know, horrible, horrible things, you know, and decried their very existence. So I'm not a boycott guy. And whether it's I will speak just as much in favor of Bill Maher's right to say ridiculous, lunatic things on the left as I will for Tucker Carlson on the right. I mean, it's like, why has everybody gotten so puritanical all of a sudden, especially people on the left who defended Bill Clinton for 2 decades before, you know, they decided, you know, I don't know, Me Too now is the big rallying cry. You know, I mean, it's like people, as long as they're not hurting someone, shouting fire in a crowded theater, all those kind of things, let's have the free speech debate. That's so what our country was founded upon. It's supposed to, you're supposed to stretch ideas. It's what this radio station exists for. We have such a great forum and platform. We have people here with all kinds of voices. And the biggest thing I'll point out is the left always seems to, they come up with these bombshells, and then within 24 hours, their hypocrisies point out. The guy who outed Tucker Carlson, Tucker outed him last night. He's got a long string of calling Bangladeshis dirty people, talking about Jew gold and jewelry, you know, attacking Jews, attacking brown people. I mean, this guy is the height of hypocrisy to dare to call out Tucker Carlson. You know, it's like pot meet kettle. So let's just have the free exchange of ideas and stop attacking each other personally.
I think one of the interesting things about the whole deal here is that the one of the things about free speech is that it allows you to see people for what they are, or at the very least understand where they're coming from, and then you can react accordingly, right? And you know, we would refer to you know, let's say a discriminatory cafe or something like that. We say, hey, they should be allowed to discriminate, and of course the free market would respond and say, yeah, that place is a crap hole because they won't do X, Y, and Z. Nobody goes there. They go out of business. That's kind of the dream, the libertarian dream of free speech, free markets, right? But what's happening today is it isn't so much everyone's kind of agreeing that, hey, we should probably, you know, not go and support what's his name. They get a group together with torches and they want to burn the place down.
The Twitter mob
is basically the rhetorical version of the torch carrying mob that wants to burn the place down. And I think there needs to be a line drawn there. I'm not sure how we do it socially or you know, legally, but it needs to be there.
Well, first of all, the fact that anyone was shocked that Tucker Carlson said something stupid, it was beyond me. I'm like, how is this even news? This has been this guy's MO forever. Judge Jeanine, I guess, I really try to avoid even knowing who that woman is, because every time I see her, she terrifies me. But again, are we shocked that she said that? No. To both of your point, but I have a little bit of a different take. Just as it's their right to say, you know, misogynistic, racist, inappropriate comments, it is other individuals' rights to say, we should boycott you, right? I mean, everybody has the right to respond in the way that they choose to respond. If you want to say those types of things, you better be prepared that people are going to come after you for it. They're going to call you out if you do something dumb. At the end of the day, it's his employer's decision what happens to him, right? And if his advertisers don't want to advertise with him anymore, that's their decision. So I think this idea that everyone has to be put in a box of how they can and can't respond and what's appropriate, if you say something stupid, people are going to have a reaction and you just better be able to take it.
You know, I think Tucker Carlson is to the right what Bill Maher is to the left. You know, I mean, I listen to Bill Maher a lot because, number one, he's good material for some of the things I do. But every once in a while, he'll come up with something that I 100% agree with him on. His defense of the state of Israel is one of them. His defense of free speech is another one. And so if you can ever get Tim Jones and someone like Bill Maher agreeing on something, well, then it may be universally be correct then. You know, you're going to disagree with them on a lot of those policy issues. And the same with Tucker Carlson. If you actually watch Tucker's show, he a lot of times will have people on the left side of the aisle on an issue that is one of those crossover issues, Dave, like big tech. There are people on the left and the right who are arguing about the power that big tech has now in our lives. And Tucker has had some out-and-out left-wing liberals on that agree with him about maybe we should be looking at how much power that Facebook and Google have over our daily existence. So I think it stretches our bounds and our imagination, and it's not a safe space.
Yeah. Let's switch and talk about the strangest story, I think, in quite a while. This deal with celebrities and rich people paying as much as $500,000 to get their crap kid into whatever school it is. You know what? Olivia Jade, Lori Loughlin's daughter, has just nudged out Hitler for me. It's like, I don't know how she... No, it's like... And the first lawsuit's been filed. Yesterday, I had Chet Pleban on, and I said somewhat sheepishly, because I thought he would crush me for it, I said, boy, someone might file a lawsuit saying that their kid didn't get in, and I thought, oh, he's going to make fun of me for not knowing stuff. And today, a $500 billion lawsuit was filed.
Some class action attorneys are going to get very wealthy.
Oh, yeah.
Billion. Oh. The argument being, my son had a 4.2 grade point average. He was in the Rotary Club and all this stuff, and... You know, he didn't get in because this person.
And I'll bet he actually played sports, right? Maybe this, you know,
the
person.
The whole thing is just nuts.
It's pretty.
It's been beyond. And then I saw today, I don't know if you guys read this yet, Lori Loughlin's daughter, when she found out about her mother's arrest on Tuesday, was on a yacht in the Bahamas of one of the USC Trust Board members. I mean, it is so disgusting. Yeah. It has gotten so... I mean, we all knew that the wealthy have advantages and can buy a new gym. And I mean, all we have to do is look at our president, his son-in-law. Money got them into school, not what's going on up top. So I'm not shocked in a way, but I think the depth, the level, and the overall conspiracy of this is just mind-boggling. That you have athletic directors, you've got parents emailing about graphic designing and putting their kids in an appropriate water polo pool. I mean, it's just really nuts, but I think it illuminates for so many what we all knew, which is there are advantages when you're that wealthy.
Well, and I'm going to go back to the theme we've been discussing. It's this is another example of the powerful and the elite. Now, I'm of course going to say it's the left-wing liberal Hollywood elites that have the edge on everybody, and that it's not, you know, the wealthy people in this country are no longer just a bunch of fat cat Republicans. Some of the wealthiest people in this country are liberal billionaires, you know, George Soros, Howard Schultz, Bill Gates, you know, people that lean left. Now, I'll bet you there's some conservatives in this. It's probably less political and more just it's a power play by people that have the ability to do that. And it's just flat out wrong.
One more right after this, DGS. Welcome back, guys. The Think Tank. We have Megan McBride making her first appearance. We have Speaker Tim Jones, Gabe Pfeiffer. We're talking about this deal with Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin and about 50 others who paid gazillions of dollars to get their kids into certain schools. And I forgot we have an MIT guy here. So, yeah.
A true rocket scientist.
Yeah. And I was at school with a lot
what
of these kids.
What did your parents have to buy?
One time they bought me books. and that was rough. But
One of the things that I kind of find interesting about the whole deal is that, yes, there's been this understanding that, you know, you if you have money, that you can kind of grease the wheels a little bit. You know, you can get your kid some of those extra tutors. You know, you can, you know, and like kind of you were saying on the break here, buy a gym for a school. Although there are plenty of, you know, situations where buying that gym or putting your name on that building didn't get your kid in. So, you know, those type of things we understood and we shook our head at it, but we accepted it. What's going on right now, what was uncovered is something that was blatantly illegal. It's something that is not just on the edge of immoral. It was full blown. So I think we can easily conflate those two things and make it seem as though they're the same, but they really, really aren't.
So put away like the true legalities and federal sentencing guidelines, just your gut. If everything they're alleging against these people are true, the parents knew it, they were in on it, there was zero confusion, should they do jail time? Should they go away for a little bit?
There should be some. And I think more out of a notion of setting the example than anything else.
The day Aunt Becky from Fuller House goes to prison, I know I'm living in a simulation. Like, it's over with.
Maybe she can go to the same place that Martha Stewart went.
Right? Yeah, it's white-collar crime. It's like, I mean, what do you do with it? But it is, it's disgusting, right? I mean, it's like, this is not supposed to happen. Somebody set up, who was the ringleader? Singer?
Singer. Yeah.
Somebody set up a business, an actual business to do this. It's It's amazing, isn't it? Well, there's got to be punishment for it so nobody does it again.
It almost, it's, part of it is so bizarre that it seems a little unbelievable. But if you think about what they're really being charged with, right? Like mail fraud, nonprofit fraud. Take it away from education, like this ridiculous notion you'd spend all this money for kids to go to college. That's like racketeering, sure. Conspiracy, mob-like, you know, efforts. So if you take it just for the actual crime and not the ridiculous scenario the crime's in, people are going to jail. Yeah, I mean, in any other circumstance, they would be going to jail.
Megan, you're right. I believe
they deserve it.
They're going to use the RICO statute.
Yeah, they should. I mean, that is exactly what it is. It's a widespread criminal conspiracy. Athletic director at USC was getting $20,000 a month to provide these fraudulent applications to her boss and to the admissions. $20,000 a month to do this. I mean, it's really bad what they did, and it is kind of reality TV crazy, but if you look at it for the crime that it is, I hope they're going away.
Some gangster stuff right there.
Do you think most people, when Singer comes to them and says, look, you're making $70,000 a year as the swimming coach for USC, you can make 150 like that.
Mm-hmm.
No, more than that. You can make $500,000 a year.
Yeah.
Do most people say, I'm going to go turn you in, or do most people do it?
I'm not sure most. Or I'll say it this way. I would like to think not most, but I don't know. People are horrible.
Well, I think it depends, too. I mean, hopefully we learn a little bit more about how it all happened. I mean, who knows? Was there blackmail involved? Like, it's hard to say how got these relationships built to this level.
Yeah.
But it does sound like, at least at USC with that athletic director, she was continuing to get essential pay raises from this guy. I mean, it didn't start out at a $20,000 a month deal. But it obviously enough people said yes that it could be this widespread and go on for as long as it did.
I think an entire industry was just born as well with the novels and the books and the made for TV movies they're going to follow. I mean, this is going to be for the next probably 5-10 years.
It's going to
be fascinating.
So easy to get someone to take your test for you. I'm so stupid.
You know what's funny?
I would have never even thought of that because I'm like, well, surely they have safeguards here.
You know, as I was listening to that whole idea, you know, the little evil part of my brain, you know, little devil that pops up on your shoulder, it's like, man, all the money you could have made in high school.
Do you guys know what
I got on my SATs? Anyway, but yeah, I honestly hope that this impacts the education system and turns it on its head, because there are aspects of it that I think need to be essentially torn down and rebuilt.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure this will do it, but I hope it's one of the cracks in the dam.
I also, I mean, I'm I went to SIU Edwardsville, and then I went to WashU Law School, so I've kind of been on both sides of it. I just don't think it's that important. I mean, certainly education's important, and certainly Harvard is, you know, empirically a better school than blah, whatever. But, you know, a lot of successful people didn't go to Ivy League, and a lot of Ivy League people aren't successful. So this feels more like ego to me.
It's about the parents,
oh,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's about the parents being able to say to their, you know, uppity friends, my daughter goes here, and we're at this school, and we go to the alumni games, and we're networking with fancy people. I think it says a lot more about parenting.
I agree.
Than it does about the educational system.
Huffman's son said, I want to go to Mizzou, would she have just like crapped her pants and like, oh my God, you can't. That's embarrassing. You know, it's like.
Well, and Dave, it doesn't happen as much here. I mean, to a little bit extent, but definitely on the coast. Again, this is about the elitists, you know, and I have friends up on the East Coast who, like, when their children are born, they start getting in waiting lines for the right preschool.
Yes.
That's where we've gone with education. Mm-hmm. And you're, like you said, it's not about going and doing well somewhere with whatever fits your talents and abilities. It's all about prestige and checking boxes and having the right titles.
The other weird story this week, is there anything of interest to us about the Boeing planes and the grounding of said planes?
Well,
is there anything you can talk about?
Not so much.
Probably not.
But politically,
is there anything?
Politically, I think it's interesting that the FAA had to was kind of a little late to the party, and the president had to step in.
That's not really what happened. I mean, the president said Tuesday morning, oh no, that we're going to let the FAA follow their data, their procedures. They have clear protocols put in place to deal with this kind of thing, and we're not just going to follow along with whatever other countries do because we have a system, and this is how we deal with these types of issues, right? Well, then we find out he got some phone calls, and people weren't so, you know, we're kind of pressuring him to do one thing over the other. And then by the end of the day, I guess their protocols can get done in 6 or 7 hours. Then the plane is pulled. I mean, there's something about it that just doesn't seem right based on what we were originally told, what needed to be done to determine if safety really was an issue, and then how it ended up being dealt with at the end of the day. I think there is a lot more to learn about, not to mention that the glitches that were supposed to be addressed were delayed from the 5 to 6 week government shutdown. I mean, I think that has been buried in the press over the last 2 days, which I can't understand why.
I didn't even know that.
Oh, yeah. They clearly stated that in multiple articles yesterday that this glitch had been identified, but no one thought, I think, it was as big of a security risk or safety risk as it ended up being, and that it was scheduled to be dealt with, and that during the government shutdown, it was delayed 5 to 6 weeks. So that is definitely, I think, has some political ramifications if anyone, you know, comes around to talk about
it. Well, I think the president was trying to protect an American company is what was going on here. I think that was the delay, whereas the Chinese were more than happy to have Boeing, you know, have a plane grounded because they've got competitors to that. So I think that's what it was. Now, look, I don't know. I think there's a reason we didn't, thank God, have any of these issues on flights here in the United States, because our pilots are the best trained in the world. They have thousands of hours of training. And from my understanding, I'm not an avionics expert, and I didn't stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night, but I have flown on a lot of aircraft, including a lot of small aircraft.
That's good.
I know a lot of pilots. I actually know a lot of pilots. And from my understanding, and Gabe may or may not be able to weigh in on this, but I think it's more of a software glitch than a hardware glitch and something actually wrong with the plane. I think it's with the technology.
Yeah.
And our pilots are probably able to handle it maybe a little better because this is just a whole new different
kind of... Since you've flown on planes, you'd know. So.
I would know. I know these things. But although, Dave, I am going to say, though, I'm glad that we have taken a pause on this because here's the problem with these things. You've got hundreds and hundreds of people on these aircrafts, and it's massive tragedies anytime something goes wrong.
But Tim, I think to your point, like I completely agree. That's what I said. Just because a plane that was, you know, in Ethiopia crashed, what does that have to do necessarily with our planes here? I mean, what I can't understand, though, is they said we're going to follow these protocols from the FAA. We clearly have like a great federal aviation system in this country. Did we actually follow those or did we jump the gun? I'm not sure. And I think it doesn't do a service to people feeling safe if we're not following science and we're not following data. So I'm really eager to know, did we do all of that and that actually found there is a problem that was so serious that they had to be grounded? Or did we just say, uh-oh, everybody else has done it, we better do it too?
A good decision to take a time out, figure this out,
yeah,
and then let the planes get back in the air.
2 minutes left. Mueller, Manafort, pardons, Cohen, anyone want to jump in? Gosh. Anyone care?
No.
It's your turn, Gabe.
Are we kind of past it?
I'm done.
Yeah. I love Manafort rolling in the wheelchair, though, with gout. I'm like, really? The man who has been the lobbyist for Russia and Ukraine, if you're going to have any disease that puts you in a wheelchair, is definitely going to be gout, which was just classic.
Mm-hmm. I'll just say, no Russian collusion. You know, I mean, we're still waiting, and you've already seen people on the left change the narrative. Well, yeah, so what about Bob Mueller? We've still got a House Investigatory Committee, gosh darn it.
And then Nancy says, so what about Bob Mueller?
Nancy Pelosi, because she said, I'm not going to proceed with impeachment.
But she didn't say, so what about Bob Mueller? She goes, it's not worth our time, which I 100% agree.
Because they agree. Nancy Pelosi's smart, unlike occasional cortex, is what I call AOC. Nancy Pelosi learned from what the Republicans did to Clinton in the 90s. Nancy's like, if we're going to go down this political witch hunt game, people are going to see it, they're going to call us out on it, and they're going to punish us at the ballot
box. But
that
has nothing to do with Mueller. That's her strategy in the House to deal with the president. Very different than whatever will or will not come out from a special prosecutor.
There have been other Democrats who I think know what's in the Mueller report because they're getting indications of it, like Warner, Mark Warner from Virginia, who have agreed there's no Russian collusion. And I think Mueller's going to find the same thing. And for 2 years, everybody on the left has said, Mueller, 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 Mueller. So when St. Bob Mueller comes out with no Russian collusion, they're either going to light their hair on fire or they're going to say, ah, forget about Bob Mueller.
I think we'll just be happy he did his work.
It'd be nice if we were.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I feel. I want to know.
I hope so.
And I mean, the fact that Manafort did, I mean, conspiracy against the United States, that's not some glowing return for your guy.
It's something that was known for 10 years.
He's calling him a brave man.
Why didn't Obama's DOJ?
Conspiracy against the United States.
Why didn't Obama's DOJ go after Manafort? Because those crimes were known to everybody for over a decade. I agree with you. President Trump need to have a better vetting system. But Manafort,
you know what?
Manafort
I'll
committed
take that.
Manafort committed his crimes.
The entire show.
Well, yeah.
Megan, where do people find you?
On Twitter, I guess, at Meg Shack, which is my old last name, and I can't figure out how to change it. Twitter handle. So
Annie
there
I can show you how to do that.
Damn Twitter.
Gabe, she helped me for my Twitter is at John Philosopher, and on YouTube, St. John the Philosopher. Please check it out.
Okay, Tim.
At Speaker Tim Jones.
Very good. Thanks, guys.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.